welcome back to the XCast X-Files Podwatch. This is episode 78, and today we're covering first-person shooter and Thief. I'm your host today, Carl Sweeney, and I'm joined by none other than Tanya Hernandez. Hello, Tanya.
Hello, Carl. Nice to be back once again.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Tanya, and I'm really keen to hear what you have to say about these two episodes. Particularly the first one, which is first-person shooter, which is the 13th episode of Season 7. First broadcast in February 2000, and it was written by William Gibson and Tom Maddox, who had earlier written Killswitch in Season 5. And this episode, perhaps surprisingly, is directed by Chris Carter. This is the episode in which a virtual reality game is taken over by a hostile character called Maitreya. So, Tanya, watching this episode makes me want to claw my own face off. How about you?
That's unfortunate.
Well, hang on. Actually, let's backtrack a second. So, okay. I know you're into computer games and things. So, how was it for you as a gamer yourself, you know, going back to revisit this episode?
Well, I remember when I first saw it, you know, I was in college and was getting back into video gaming. I believe I had my PlayStation 1 had just come out, so I had that. You know, watching this episode, it was fun to see, like, oh, wow, that's cool. They're like, doing a video game episode, which is, like, I didn't expect that on the X-Files. And then watching it now, after years have gone by, I still enjoyed it. I mean, obviously, now, especially since I write about video games and, you know, I speak to developers and interviewed people and, you know, read up on, like, how, you know, games are being developed and stuff like that. Obviously, there is a big naivete, as you will, about, like, how a game like this can even be conceived. Like, I went back and I went to see, like, what kind of games were out at the time this episode came out. And, you know, as great as the technology was then, it was nowhere near the level at what was being conceived in this episode. Whereas, actually, a lot of that stuff, surprisingly, is, like, now coming into play. You know, the original VR at the time was already dead by the time this episode came out. But it was interesting to see how they were conceiving, like, what VR could be. And then to see it now, like, the way Oculus and, you know, PlayStation VR and you know, all these new VR gadgets, how they're actually being used nowadays. It's pretty interesting to see the parallels, like, to see, like, that episode kind of gave a little hint as to what it could be. And how actually now a lot of that is being developed now, like, you know, using body attachments to simulate, you know, gunshots through electrical impulses, you know, things like that. Like, that's actually going on now. Like, a lot of that stuff is in development and being tested with certain games. So I thought that was really cool. And I thought it was well done. And I do see where they did get some input from the gaming industry, but then comes the writers, the typical X-File writers' input is in the rest of the episode where it gets really far-fetched and really fantastical and really silly. So I could see why some fans would not like this episode because it does get kind of silly. But I thought they did a really nice job in trying to integrate some of, like, what gaming involves and stuff like that.
That's interesting. So you kind of think it's a bit ahead of its time in some ways.
It actually is. Like, considering, like, you know, the way they were conceiving using projectors to create an environment around you, we aren't doing that now. But the way the VR technology is, where it's 360 degrees, like, I've tried some of these VR games where you're just standing there and you could literally walk in the actual space, like, you can do that. Like, that's pretty much what this episode was conceiving, and it's kind of happening now. And then you have motion feedback with controllers. And like I said, like, they're testing, like, vests that simulate, like, you know, hits. Like, if you get hit in the game, you feel it on your body, which is what those vests in the episode did. So, like, it kind of foreshadowed some things that maybe people were thinking about back then. And now that the technology is so much more powerful, like, now people can actually say, okay, I can actually conceive this and actually put this into production now. So I thought that aspect of it was pretty cool. But then when you get to the plot of the story and how a computer program jumped programs like that, I was like, all right, come on now. I was like, that was ridiculous. Obviously, that was absurd. But I thought it was fun. I enjoyed it. As a gamer, I wasn't offended by it. I've seen other shows where it's like, ugh, like, why would you depict that? Like, they didn't have the typical fat, lazy gamer, you know, sitting in the parents' basement. Like, you know, these people were pretty, even though, like, the guy in charge of the company, he was kind of a scumbag, but they were, you know, pretty intelligent people. Then you had the lone gunman involved, which is cool, because, you know, these guys are smart, and you wouldn't be surprised that they're, like, nerds and stuff like that. So I thought it was a fun episode. Obviously, it's not one of the best ones, but I don't think it was terrible.
Let me give you some of my objections to it then, all right? So, you mentioned about, like, the silliness, and, yeah, that's one of my issues with it. It's got this kind of really odd, like, wacky tone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sometimes in Chris Carter's episodes, ones that he either writes and or directs, you know, occasionally you get this kind of wackiness, and it doesn't always work, I don't think. I think that if you compare this to the earlier episode, Killswitch, that Gibson and Maddox wrote, where Rob Bowman directed it, and I think, you know, all the performances in that episode hit quite a nice tone.
Yeah, I thought the concept of, like, you know, AI becoming self-aware, I thought it was better executed definitely in that episode than it was in this episode, for sure.
Yeah. So, I don't know, there's some stuff here where some of the characters seem a bit out of character. So, like, the lone gunmen are normally these kind of counterculture, anti-capitalist guys. And in this episode, to kind of get the plot rolling, there's this thing where they stand to make a lot of money from the game success. And that seemed a little odd to me.
I mean, that seemed a little odd, but at the same time, it shows, like, they weren't completely unflawed. Even the most idealistic, you know, patriot has to have a little greed in them. You know what I mean?
No, I definitely know what you mean. But, like, there could have been an interesting point, like, made there about, you know, how hard it is to be principled and stuff. And it's kind of not really delved into. But, yeah, I take your point. What about Mulder, then? Because I'm thinking of that scene. It's like the interrogation scene with Jade Blue Afterglow. I don't know. Mulder seems particularly, you know, like, leering and stuff in this episode. What did you think of that?
I thought it was funny because earlier in the episode, Scully, you know, mentions, you know, why is it video games make guys turn into, like, you know, silly horn dogs or whatever, you know, ultra masculine fools and stuff like that. So I guess this was kind of a play on that. It was definitely way more out of character, I mean, than normal. I don't know if they've ever interrogated anyone as hot as her. I mean, it's not like he's never flirted before with other people, but just not to the point where he's, like, jello. But I think it was kind of, I think it was more of, like, purposely done like that, as because I guess in the end, they're not taking this episode as seriously as maybe the next episode. And the idea that they're not taking it as seriously is kind of a bummer too, because, like I said, being a gamer, that's something you hear a lot from people that don't game or don't understand it, that it's just a toy or it's just silly make-believe and stuff like that, and they don't, like, really understand, like, how, you know, they're still seeing, through, you know, 8-bit Mario and just they don't, like, realize the kind of stories that have developed out of gaming nowadays, like, just almost as good as, like, an Oscar-winning movie. You know, that's unfortunate, but again, like, you have to consider probably half the writer's room maybe, you know, gamed and the other half didn't, so it's kind of like you're going to get that influence in the script.
Yeah, I definitely feel like Chris Carter probably has never played a video game in his life.
Yeah. somehow sounded like asteroids or something like that.
Well, yeah, because like actually the game itself that you see is kind of a bit like Space Invaders, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
With like the rows of people coming towards the player and stuff.
Yeah, like because like I said, like that's pretty cool because there's like horde mode and like, you know, like a Call of Duty game or things like that. So that concept was pretty cool, you know, but then it just veers off into... You know, like a complete like, oh, it must be like this, and it's like totally not like that. But you know, like I said, it touched on gaming in a way that I was not like completely offended the way I've been in other shows and movies and things like that, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, I was going to ask you because I mean, I don't find like the game environment here, I mean, obviously it's just a warehouse, but that's fine. But you know, like when you actually see them playing and stuff, I didn't actually find it that interesting to look at. But what did you think?
Yeah, it was pretty like self-explanatory. Like, you know, these guys shooting and there was nothing like no traps or anything. That was, I guess, maybe budgetary issues. Like maybe they might have concepted something much more detailed where like they actually do platforming and, you know, try to escape traps and stuff like that. It was basically just your basic shooter. So I mean, it's unfortunate that they didn't try to incorporate other elements of gaming in the episode, but I would imagine it's probably time and money that prevented it from getting even more. But it is funny because you're like, how are you going to sell this to malls if it's just this? Like, that's boring, you know? Unless you incorporate other human elements as a versus type of thing, you know? Maybe that could have been it. But yeah, they didn't really explain like how this was going to be the hot ticket item at your local mall. You know,
I think it's a problem you also see in like in season one in Ghost in the Machine,
mm-hmm.
where you've got another AI type episode where it ends up with like the building is trying to stop them, which could be really, really cool. But they haven't quite, you know, either they didn't know how to pull it off or like you say, time and money, all those things. So
it's unfortunate. Yeah, it's unfortunate that they just like, oh, just unplug it. That'll fix it. And it's like, no, that's not how it works. You know, that's the same thing that happened in Ghost in the Machine. They were just like, oh, just destroy this and it'll stop it. And it's like, that's not how computer works. So, you know, again, like I said, it's probably half of the writer's room that doesn't really understand how those things work. So they just go for the easy out. The concept of, you know, this developer creates her goddess, which is very interesting. But, you know, and she just jumps programs, like, randomly. Like, how do you even do that? Like, that's not even possible. It's not like, you know, your Excel spreadsheet could just jump into your Word program, you know? Like, you know, like, okay, that was the explanation. I was like, okay. I was like,
Yeah, like that. Definitely, the how and the why just weren't doing it for me in this one.
Yeah.
And, like I say, the wackiness, some of the performances, like that male developer. Didn't like his performance whatsoever. Just finally then, we'll have to wrap this one up, but what about like the badass Scully? Because I know some fans do like this episode because of that. I mean, for me, Scully's badass enough anyway, you know, so I didn't really need much of that. But what did you think?
Well, I love Scully, so I thought it was awesome that she had to go... Like, think about it like this. So Mulder goes in there thinking he's going to take care of the problem. He gets stuck in there, right? He just has a sword somehow that he thinks that's going to work. And then Scully decides, all right, I'm going to take this into my own hands, goes in there, saves him, and then gets to like level 3 of the game, which nobody else ever got to because they kept saying,
which is ridiculous.
Nobody's ever survived level 2. Meanwhile, she gets to the tank level, all right, and she was still shooting that program until like they finally got them out. I think that was pretty awesome that, you know, girls could game, number one.
Yeah.
Scully, who's not a gamer, was like, screw this. I'm going to take this over and fix this problem. And totally did. And she got to levels that all their testing teams never got to.
How can they sell a game that nobody's ever got past level 2 on? You know,
I mean, I guess that's the challenge. You know, people are going to want to be challenged by it. But, I mean, Scully took care of it. You know what I mean? Like, that's just awesome. I just think that's awesome.
So, Thief is the 14th episode of season 7, and this was broadcast in March 2000. It was written by Vince Gilligan, John Scheiben, and Frank Spotnitz, and directed by Kim Manners. And this is the episode which sees the agents investigate the murder of a successful doctor's father-in-law. And Mulder comes to suspect that Hexcraft is involved. So what do you reckon of this one, then?
Typical X-Files episode, more completely back to normal, I guess, compared to first-person shooter. Dark, moody, Billy Drago, which is like a great character actor in it, playing the antagonist in this. I wouldn't say he's the bad guy, because he has a reason for what he's doing. You know, a father in anguish and grief who is just out for revenge. And, I mean, understandably, but of course, you know, against the law. And I thought it was cool. It was a good episode. I do think there's a pretty big glaring plot hole in it, in that how, if this guy lives in the Appalachian Mountains with no technology whatsoever, thousands of miles away from his daughter, which we never get an explanation as to why she was in California. Maybe she wanted to get away from that. Maybe she wanted to see the world. We don't get any background story about that. How in the world did he find out about what happened to his daughter?
Good question.
I mean, how did he know that this doctor in this hospital all the way in California, if she was buried in a Potter's cemetery in California, how did he know that he was the one that basically euthanized her because she was in so much agony? You know, how did he know that this is the guy?
That's a great point. I didn't even think about that, to be honest. But yeah, totally valid. Yeah, I mean, I like this episode quite a bit, actually. And I think the main reason is it's pretty well shot, to be honest. I think that Kim Manners, he obviously has kind of like a strong stomach for this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And you really need a director who, like, kind of takes a bit of relish in this kind of story, I think. And that's what he is. And he's got a really, like, innate sense of camera placement. The camera's always in the right place to get the most out of any particular scene, it seems like to me. So I really like the fact he kind of efficiently sets up this perfect family within a minute or so. And you can just feel him sort of taking the glee and kind of destroying them and besieging them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I really enjoyed the episode because of him, really, because of the way the episode looks and feels. I mean, I think in, like, the best standalone episodes, you're really into what Mulder and Scully are doing, and you're also really into, like, the guest characters. And then there's some episodes where you're not into the guest characters, but Mulder and Scully carry the day.
Yes.
In this one, I really like James Morrison, and I really like Billy Drago, and Mulder and Scully are just kind of bobbing along in the background for me.
Yeah, I did notice that. Yeah, they're kind of just bringing in the pieces, you know, just tying the pieces together. Meanwhile, the Doctor and the father are the ones that are really, like, pushing the emotion throughout the episode, which I thought was interesting. I liked it. I thought they did a great job.
Yeah, definitely a very good, a very well-cast episode, I think. That thing I said about Kim Manners, apparently Rob Bowman had to step in for him for a day when Manners was sick. But I've got no idea for what scenes. But so some of the stuff I'm really praising Manners for might be down to Rob Bowman, but we're not sure.
Well, either way, it was pretty seamless. I didn't feel like there was any disjointed scenes from, like, sometimes you notice that if a scene doesn't feel like it fit with the rest of it, but it all seemed pretty seamless to me.
Yeah, it all feels very much of the same piece, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So what about Mulder and Scully then? Because there's this thing going on where Mulder keeps saying the same thing about, you know, you always keep me guessing. Did you have any thoughts on, like, their dynamic in this episode?
This is after All Things, correct? Because All Things was the previous season.
No, this is a few episodes before All Things.
Really?
Yeah,
okay.
I was thinking about that too, yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, I think I discussed that in a podcast coming up. You know, in that episode, Scully is trying to find her truth, and she's starting to gingerly accept alternative, you know, thoughts and methods. And so in this episode, which is a whole episode about, you know, modern medicine versus, you know, more archaic medicine, if you will, and belief systems and things like that, she immediately starts, you know, once Mulder starts introducing it, she's like, okay, that's maybe a possibility. And he's like shocked that she's like, what?
Yeah.
He's like, girl, what you talking about? So I thought that was pretty cool, because this is like around the time where Scully starts not fully accepting, you know, Mulder's always explanation, like, you know, crazy explanations, but she's more perceptive to considering it, especially in that scene where she's in the morgue and she's like trying to, you know, describe what's happened to this person, and she just can't figure it out. Like, she's like, I don't understand, like, how this was even happening. So, you know, it's yeah. pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely. I was thinking about All Things as well, actually, because, yeah, this is like a few episodes prior to that. And in All Things, she's kind of seems open to stuff like alternative medicine.
Meditation, things like that.
Yeah. So it's really interesting. I mean, I don't know if it was the intent to kind of prepare the ground for that here, but you can definitely see it that way.
I wonder if they were shot out of sequence. I don't know.
Well, actually, this episode was thrown together quite quickly, I believe.
Oh, okay.
Like, over the Christmas period that year, because another script fell through, and the writers had to get together, like, put their heads together really quickly to kind of get this one up and running. And, I never really had the sense. I mean, like you say, there is that kind of plot hole, but I didn't really get the sense it was, like, patched together or, you know, a rush job or anything like that. So I think a pretty good job all around, really.
Yeah, I mean, despite me pointing out the plot hole, which I didn't realize until this second viewing, like this more recent viewing, I totally ignored it the first time around. I just thought, oh, this is a really good episode. It's creepy and stuff. But even in spite of that, like, the episode still is strong. Like, it still plays strong. It plays like a good, typical meat and potatoes X-Files episode, you know?
Yeah, I really like this one. If I was making a list of underrated episodes, I think I'd throw this one on there, but just because you don't really hear people talking about it a great deal. All right, Tanya, unless you had anything else, you know, urgently to say about Thief, we can wrap it up, I guess.
Nothing, just a good, like I said, it's a meat and potatoes, comfort food type of X-File episode. Just, you know, that one big plot hole, but it's a big plot hole, but the episode is so strong and the performances are so good that you kind of ignore it. It kind of goes away in the background and you're like, okay, you know, but it's a decent episode for season 7, especially, which is where some of the problems started happening. I think it was a strong episode.
All right, Tanya, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And tomorrow on the podcast, it's Onami and Chimera. In the meantime, you can find us in the usual places on Twitter and on Facebook, but until next time, trust no one.